This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we have one sponsor for the show, and that is Diamond Assets, and we'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you?
Very, very good. Got a great tip for everybody this week on purchasing. I saw a tweet earlier that I thought, okay. Oh, it's so huge. I've been getting a couple emails this week about like Chromebook sales. Mm-hmm. One thing to remember about those is Google will support a Chromebook model for 5 years with updates. Mm. So, and it's not from I think it's based on the release of it, not from the date that you purchased it.
Yeah.
So there's a link I will put into the show notes. There's a shows which models and when they released and all that. So that's something to consider. Like if you are buying a fleet of Chromebooks and something seems like it's like a fire sale, you kind of need to look and see when it was released because it may be 3 years old. Mm-hmm. So my tip of the day.
Yeah, I always have thought with Chromebooks that this may not be true anymore. This may be kind of year-old thinking or two-year-old thinking, but my sense with Chromebooks was always that the performance of them is so incredibly variable that you could buy... I mean, I've owned what I think is the best Chromebook so far, which is the Dell Chromebook. And I've also owned the worst one, which is the HP 11 Chromebook, which was the slowest thing that had ever been built. And there's the dynamic range between the fastest and the slowest Chromebook was huge by comparison. So it's also something to think about a little bit is, are you getting an ARM-based Chromebook or are you getting an Intel-based Chromebook? I'm pretty sure that the Dell ones are Intel-based and they're way faster.
Faster. Yeah. ARM is great for certain things, but it's not always great for other things.
Yeah. Very much. Got a little update as well, Bradley. Do you remember all that iPad fundraising stuff we did during the summer? I was trying to raise money. I did raise money for us to buy or lease and send a number of iPads to the Barefoot College in India, which is an organization that they train women in rural India to become solar engineers to build projects for their villages and families and so on. Well, that whole project succeeded, as you know, and it's taken us a little while, but we have managed to, they shipped out today, one of our donors who's paying for all the transport, they came and took them away today. They're now packed and on a pallet, sitting in a loading dock, waiting to go to India, and they'll probably be on a plane tomorrow or Monday. So, yeah, by the time you hear this, those things will at least be in the air, if not actually on the ground in India as well. So we're nearly at the end of that project.
Very cool. It'd be great to hear, I guess, later on how they're actually doing with them and using them.
Yeah, it would be great. Maybe we could get Srini, one of the guys from Barefoot, to come on and tell us a little bit about the new life those iPads are having.
So tonight we thought we would do a kind of a social media refresh for schools. We've kind of briefly touched on this in our deployment series, but I don't think we've ever done a specific show about it. If we have, it's been a while. And so I want to preface this before you start. If your school doesn't really have any social media presence, or it's maybe it has a Facebook page that's sparsely updated, before you, signing up for accounts in mass, take a step back and define some goals for social media. Who are you reaching? What are you, are you trying to reach prospective parents or connect with existing parents? Define some goals. And then also define what you can do effort-wise you can put into this. So don't make a big splash about your Instagram page to your families if no one's responsible for kind of posting to it or no one does. These things are better off to not exist than to exist poorly and to exist to never be updated. It's you're better off not doing that. Because I see those things in my Twitter feed and on blogs. It's the seven social networks your school must be signed up for. It's garbage, and it's you just don't need to do it. I would say most schools could get by with one and do it really, really well. No point in having, if you're not going to use Snapchat as a school and make it a key part of your marketing strategy and your connecting with parent strategy, your parent relationship strategy, then don't sign up for one. You don't have to have an account on every social media website because they all come and go. They mm-hmm. really do.
Yep. So, that Friendster page you've got for your school probably can get shut down now.
Bingo. Or the Google Plus page.
Yes.
And that's not to say you shouldn't own your Google location on Google, like on their location. You should, but you don't necessarily have to be on, you know, promote your Google Plus page. So the first thing I would recommend is take stock in the networks that your parents use. So like if you're, I don't know about your school, but like our teachers have a, you know, they connect with their, you know, all the parents on Facebook and social media. And that's fantastic if that's your strategy. And so like if you've got a ton of parents who use Facebook, maybe Facebook is like one of your key things. If you, for whatever reason, have a ton of parents that use Twitter, maybe Twitter is where you kind of promote yourself the most. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I would say do it well or don't do it at all, is my number one advice. It's just like with a blog. If you're going to have a school blog and you haven't updated it in 3 years, delete it. It's pointless. It just makes you look out of date. Or not out of date, but it makes it look like you're not trying.
Yeah, I think we certainly have a Twitter account that doesn't really get used very much at all. But there, what we found is that nobody ever mentioned it to us. Like no parents ever came and said, "Oh, I follow you on Twitter, but you never post anything. What's up with that?" And from that, we kind of deduced and asked around a little bit that most of our parents aren't on Twitter. You know, Twitter isn't a big deal for them. Facebook is. We're still debating whether to do Facebook or not, but the big thing we've pushed into this year is Instagram, which we'll talk about later on, and that has been a huge hit. And I think we finally kind of found the right formula for social media for the school, and I'll talk a little bit more about the transition to that later on, but we're very happy with what's going on with that just now.
Now, and I guess I want to define the idea of like push versus pull marketing. So like when we post things on our website, we're asking families to come to our website. Like, you know, if we post a blog, we may post it on social media and like we're trying to pull them into us. Like if we're trying to make like our website the destination, and that's a fine strategy. Or, you know, when it comes to push marketing, it's like where if you're going to post a video, you're not like embedding it on your website. You're saying, hey, I'm going to post this natively on Facebook or natively on Instagram. So and there's different ideas to that. There's certain things that we obviously put on our website but then link to socially, but we try to be as native to the platform as possible. And I'll say I'm not real big for our school on like big on tools like Hootsuite and Buffer, because we found that different style of content works best on certain types of social media. And so we try to, and we use Twitter and Facebook and Instagram mostly, and then Twitter's kind of a secondary force. It's almost like a broadcast sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But we just feel like using it natively works best.
Yeah, I think one of the things about that is it's really important to like align your marketing push with what that platform offers, right? So, for example, if your goal is to get more people to your website and you're trying to do that through Instagram, that's like the worst possible choice, right? Because Instagram is all about keeping you in the Instagram feed. You can't put an active link into a comment in Instagram, for example, and things like that. Whereas on Twitter, for example, you could drive traffic to your site through Twitter without too much bother. Facebook possibly as well. So it's important to kind of line up with what the social network's trying to do as well.
The funny thing about the Instagram thing, like even Apple's Instagram page, like, so the trick on Instagram is to change your website link to whatever like your most recent photo that you're trying to push people to. So everybody says, you know, link in bio.
Link in bio, well,
even Apple has to do that. So it's kind of funny.
No exceptions.
no exceptions. So let's talk about Facebook for our school. So I'll say Facebook Live is the hot commodity right now for all brands on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that like all brands are doing it well or doing this, but everybody knows, or if you don't. So Facebook has this posting algorithm. So like if you have, I'll use our school for example. We have about 1,300 fans. Like people have liked our page. But if we make a post, we see about an average of 2 to 250 see that. Mm-hmm. And so the way Facebook works is everybody's friends with like 8 million people. And so they can't possibly like see everything. So Facebook tries to algorithmically show you the best stuff. So for brands, that means you pay. And so you can do what's called boosting a post. So like you can throw five bucks on a post and it'll boost it and more people will see it. And that it does work. It's kind of a little bit, not blackmail, but it's like, this, you know, one of their business models, and that's fine.
It's not blackmail, it's extortion. That's
right. What it is. but Facebook Live right now is the thing they're really pushing. Mm. And so, like, when you go live, your followers are notified. And then after that, the video from that. So, like we've done it in chapel before. Like, we broadcast a special ceremony at the beginning of our chapel or something. Mm-hmm. Well, it'll show you, like, how many people are watching it. It'll say, notifying your followers. Well, even after that, the video is auto-dumped to your Facebook feed. And we've seen, even on those, like, it'll be like 800 people have seen this versus like 200 for just like a regular text post or even a post with the photo. So Facebook right now is kind of just letting the live stuff flow from our experience.
They're not throttling that out, or they're not filtering out poor quality stuff, because they want that to be – like, that's a huge big push for Facebook as an organization, isn't it, to get – Facebook Live in front of as many people as possible.
Bingo. So if you're going to do video, try to go live first and it'll still be there. Mm-hmm. Now, so our strategy with Facebook is really twofold. Number one, it's a way to connect with parents and let them see what their kids are doing. Now, I'll put a couple of caveats. We never, ever, ever mention kids' names in our post. And certainly, even if we mention maybe first names, we never mention last names. And we never tag parents in a photo. So, like, you know, like you can say, like, who's in this photo? Like, we don't tag the parents. So, and that's a security thing for us. And we talked about this in our faculty meetings. It's like, number one, don't post pictures of anything at school for, you know, like, of the kids to your personal page. And number two, don't, like, if you post it on the school's account, don't tag any parents. Now, the parents can tag themselves, and that's fine. That's their prerogative. But we don't do that because we do allow our teachers to post. Like, you can go in there and like, whoever your page admin can give people access to post. And it's pretty good. We've never had a situation where someone's posted accidentally, you know, on our page that was, like, something on theirs. We have had it where they've, like, commented on a post of the school's as them. But, you know, like, what always happens is, like, our headmaster wishes every employee a happy birthday on Facebook. Well, like, another teacher will comment on that and say, happy birthday, so-and-so, but they don't realize that they're actually still posting as the school. It defaults to replying as the school on the school's page. So we're trying to connect with parents and kind of let them see what's going on during the day and just to show them some of the value that they're getting at our school. And then we also, you know, the idea of that is if they like that and they share that, if they reshare that, well, then we're getting put in front of prospective families as well. I mean, you know, word of mouth is huge for us. I was reading our new parent survey we send out. Like, you know, just we have 20 questions we ask about, like, you know, how was your, you know, what led you to choose our school? What other schools did you consider? What other things did you feel like those schools did better than us? And just et cetera, et cetera. And one of the questions is, like, how did you hear about us? And honestly, it feels like it's like 9 times out of 18. It's like friend goes here, neighbor goes here. I mean, it's just how parents are, they talk. And so, like, I mean, my neighbor, I literally texted me yesterday and was asking about our school. He knows I work at Brandon Baptist School. His daughter is, you know, getting of the age where she might go here. And he's, like, asking about it. And we had a, you know, 30-minute text conversation about it. So referrals are huge for us. And so if parents share that post on social media, that's awesome. So it's kind of like half – it's a brochure of our school day. Then it's also like a way to connect with the existing families as well.
I'm personally not on Facebook, so I've always kind of shied away from doing something on Facebook for the school. I think I kind of feel like I should, but I've never quite got to the point where I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm going to dive into Facebook now. So maybe that's something I should.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat. Like, I haven't had an account for 5 years or five or six years. And so, like, they thankfully have a Pages app, like, that's dedicated to brands that I use to post. Mm-hmm. And so that works well. But yeah, I'm the same. Like, Facebook isn't my thing. Like, every time I have to log into the desktop version, I log into our headmaster's account. And, like, I don't understand what's going on. It's like, I feel like there's so much going on. I'm very confused, and there's so many badges everywhere on things. And so I don't regret not having one, but, but it's one of those things. I know that's where the majority of our parents are. So here's I'll tell you a funny story. We got a new guy here working at our church. He's our new discipleship pastor. And so we've texted back and forth. He moved here from Nashville. We've texted back and forth a few times about getting him set up. And then we've met once, Well, so there's a guy here that works in our missions office that looks a lot like me. And enough where, like, parents at our school and kids at the school can get us confused sometimes. Like, if we're side by side, you can tell us apart. Mm-hmm. But just from, like, glancing and so even before he worked here, he managed a Chick-fil-A near our school. And people would always say, hey, does your brother run the Chick-fil-A? I mean, and then when they started coming to church here, people would call him Bradley. Like, from afar, hey, Bradley. And, like, they didn't – and so – and it's, you know, it just so happens that he works here now. His wife's a teacher at our school. My son's actually in his wife's class this year. And so first day this new guy came, he was in the office. We were talking, and he said something about Facebook. And I said, well, I don't have a Facebook account. He's like, yeah, you do. I saw a picture of you yesterday. Like, you know, we're friends on Facebook. And I was like, no. And he pulled it up, and he said, is this not you? And then he looked at my employee badge, and it's like, oh, no. We had like a 20-minute, and see, the thing is, that's happened to the other guy multiple times where people have had conversations that they thought it was me, but it's never happened to me where they thought it was him. So it was like, it was such a weird conversation, like at the end of it, because like we were talking about things I felt like he should have known about me because we had talked about it, and it was just like, oh, this makes more sense. You didn't realize who I was. It was just kind of funny. It was kind of funny. That's a, you know, Facebook story.
You're the more famous one. Yeah.
So that's our strategy on Facebook. We feel like we do that well, and honestly, it's our headmaster driving it. Like, he really is a big believer in social media, and mm-hmm. he loves Facebook, and so he's the one that does that really well. And our teachers do a really nice job too. They really do. They're on a field trip. They'll post things. They're doing something cool in the classroom. They'll post it. They do a nice job. And so it's a team effort. I mean, most schools aren't big enough to have a marketing manager, or it's certainly not a social media manager. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but you know, maybe there are some schools that have, you know, dedicated communications directors, I know, but like ours is just not. And so we feel like some of those just fun, candid shots are what parents love the most.
Yeah, I know that from our experience as well. And we've our social media, it wasn't called social media back then, but our kind of parent engagement strategy, if you like, do you want to put it that way, has been class blogs forever. I mean, I want to say like 10 years now, we've had, like, each class has had a blog or whatever. And initially that was on Blogger. And later we kind of brought it in together with our website on Weebly.com, about which, you know, I'm not delighted with them, but that's what we did. Now we brought it onto Weebly two or three years ago. And the problem we had with that, like, parents loved it, right? Parents loved it. Grandparents loved it, and you know, family friends loved it as well, because they could see the kids. You know, people who don't always see the kids, they can see them on the internet as well. And people, it was just so popular. You know, the engagement was through the roof. And whenever you would talk to parents at the school gate, they'd be like, "Oh, I saw this on the blog. I saw that on the blog," or so on. But the problem we had was that the blogging component on Weebly was terrible. And it started not that great, and it just got worse over time. And it was unreliable, it was fiddly to make. The native apps, the iOS apps, were really, really poor. And Weebly seemed to not have any idea how to make it work. Because we were in a situation like 2 years ago where they had like a Weebly Classic app and a Weebly app. And depending on what it is you wanted to do, you had to use one app or the other. And if you were a contributor to the site rather than the owner of the site. So I ended up having to give out the root administrator password to the whole website to every teacher who wanted to write a blog so they could do it on their phone. You know, it was stuff like that, which was just, you know, keeps you awake at night as a sysadmin. So last year, what we decided to do was we decided that for this school year, we were going to switch to Instagram. And the reason that came up was basically because teachers were demanding a fast and easy smartphone-based workflow for posting pictures. And that's what the blogs had kind of become, was mostly pictures and a little bit of text about what was going on in the classroom or in the school or on a trip or something like that. And that had to happen from the phone. And people were just like, there's no way I have got time in my life to take pictures on my phone, go back to my desktop computer, download those pictures, arrange a fancy post in Weebly through Flash on the desktop and upload it, you know. People had become so kind of mobile first, and it had to take like 10 seconds to do. Failures were just not tolerated by teachers at all. So we're sitting there going, what's a platform where we can post pictures on the internet that's really fast and reliable, always works, and is really native to iOS? Duh, Instagram, right? So that was how we kind of ended up with that. And I know you've done that as well, Bradley. You've done more with Instagram recently too.
Yeah, it's a newer tool for us. And to me, I see Instagram as an extension of Facebook in some ways because it's owned by it. So we're seeing like a lot of those same parents get on there. Like Instagram. Like, I'm on Instagram. I really like it. To me, it's the best of Facebook. The people, you know, kid photo. That's all my feed is kid photos.
See what I love about Instagram, right? Instagram is a social network where people go to be happy. Right? It seems to be the only one. Maybe Pinterest is the other one. I don't know. But Twitter is all about arguing with people, and Facebook's all about drama. Instagram is like, I smile every time I go to Instagram, right? And that's the thing I love about putting the school's brand alongside Instagram, is that people love stuff on Instagram because it's happy stuff, right? For the most part. Maybe it's the people I follow, but that's the sense I get from Instagram, is that people enjoy it. It's fun, it's happy, and it feels like the kind of right place to put the school's brand alongside.
Before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. It's the fine folks at Diamond Assets. Now, Fraser and I have talked about refreshing your deployments a lot, and we've talked about getting value out of your existing deployment. So Diamond Assets exists to support schools in their efforts to capture the value of their existing deployment of their Apple products. So all too often, really, schools they put this stuff in a closet, or they just give it away. They don't realize the advantage of taking their existing Apple gear, and that's where Diamond Assets comes in. They help you to avoid losing money on this stuff, because if you don't take the value of it, you're actually losing it. The process is simple. You request a quote, you schedule a pickup, you join them for a reconciliation call, and then you receive your payment for your equipment. They're a full-service IT asset recovery company. They offer a complete range of services to their clients, like buyback, white glove pickup, easy scheduling, serial number audits, reconciliation reports, customer support, labeling, coding, and merchandise, inventory tracking, as well as making sure all the data is erased for all your Apple gear. Because that's honestly something that you don't think about when you're trying to refresh your deployment, is making sure the existing data on your device is cleaned up at all, any school data or student data you have. But by combining their white glove services, their great trade-in values, and their dedicated account management team, Diamond Asset has allowed school districts across the U.S. to take full advantage of one of the most unique trade-in programs in the industry. If you're considering a refresh of your Apple gear, or just want to get some rid of your old iPads or Macs, please contact Diamond Assets, and they will help you in that process. Again, we were actually going through our yearly audit it was a painful audit with our, we have a, accounting firm come in and audit our school every year, and one of the things they were asking for is our Apple lease, because we made a lease on our Apple payment on our Apple lease like in our last fiscal year. Well, that was for the lease we signed in 2013, so I actually had to call up our Apple folks, and they had to dig up that lease paperwork, because we made a payment, although we had signed the lease 3 years ago, we had made a payment on that lease. They wanted to see it, and they were asking, is it, what kind of lease was it? Fair market value buyout or a dollar buyout? And we do dollar buyout because that gear is so stinking valuable. So don't let this stuff get, just don't let your old iPad sit in the closet. Contact Diamond Asset and get some money out of it. We'll have a link to them in the show notes. So going back to Instagram, this is right now, we mentioned the Facebook algorithm earlier. Right now, whoever you follow on Instagram, that's who you generally see. Now, there's rumors of that changing, and I don't know that I like that. I like being able to see who I follow.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I've also started to see ads alongside Instagram for the first time in the UK as well. Have you people had that for longer, Bradley? I don't know.
Well, what's funny is this summer I saw all kinds of ads. And the thing is, I bought things from those ads. Like, I didn't realize that the Avett Brothers were coming out with a new album. They had an Instagram ad. I clicked on it, looked, threw me to iTunes, I pre-ordered it. Like, I was like, this is how advertising should work. Like, that's something I did not know existed that I wanted, and I bought it. And I saw them all summer, and I've not seen one I've not seen one in probably 2 months. I don't know why.
Yeah, weird. They must be just learning more about it, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't know if they have, I don't know. There's probably a reason, but We are also kind of experimenting with the Instagram stories. And so what stories are, that's really a copy from Snapchat, and that's fine. It's kind of a disposable thing. Like, so you can post like a collection of pictures, like if you're having an event or something. You can post a collection of them. You can, you know, type, you know, put text on top of them very easily. And then after 24 hours, they disappear.
I really enjoy that. I enjoy more other people posting it than doing it myself. I kind of feel like I should be keeping that stuff, you know. If I want to take a picture of it, I want to keep it, you know. But
well, I went to a Switchfoot concert this past Saturday. Like, I posted a video from the concert on there. Not something I necessarily want to keep, but you know, I'd say what's funny is, like, you know, if I post a photo, I might get like, I'm not, you know, I have a private account, so I don't have a ton of followers. Like, I probably get 30 likes or so on a photo, like a picture of one of my kids. It's, you know, I guess a decent picture. And what's funny is if I post a story, I'll get like 90 views. And it shows who's viewed them. And I'm like, I didn't even let that person follow me. And so it's like you see the people that are lurkers and never like anything of yours, but then we'll look at everybody's stories.
Look at it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But stories is something you can tinker with. You know, does your school have a use case for that? I know our church uses it quite a bit, and like they'll post stuff of like they're setting, you know, the team's setting up for a worship service, can't wait to see you, and you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that the Instagram lacks that Facebook and Twitter do have is the ability to schedule things. I know a lot of tools have the ability. They say they have Instagram capabilities, but all they can do is remind you to post something. It's basically a glorified calendar appointment.
Yeah.
And so there is no third-party way to do that. Now, one of the things that did get added late last school year is multiple accounts. So this was a huge pain for us, is you can now sign into multiple accounts at the same time, where before you had to actually log out of your personal account and then log into the school's account as well.
How many accounts are you running across the school?
Well, just one, but I had my personal account and then the school's. Yep. So, like, every time I wanted to post this at the school, I had to sign out of me.
We're running actually 5 different accounts across the school. So, we have 3 composite primary classes. So, we have primary 1 and 2, primary 3 and 4, primary 5 and 6. And then primary 7 is actually part of what we call middle school in our school. So, we've got 1 account for all of middle school and 1 account for the kind of high school age group. So we run 5 different accounts. I'm logged into 2 of those, the middle school and the high school. And then each of the class teachers in primary school take responsibility. They own those accounts. And other people have got the password, but they're the person who's responsible for the content that appears on that account. So that way we can sort of, cause I've got some stats actually, I'll share them with you in a minute. We're posting a lot on Instagram, and in some ways I think actually, we might have made it a little bit too easy for some teachers to post on Instagram. I know, you know, when we started doing it, I personally like subscribed to all of the accounts, and I had to unsubscribe from some of them because it was just, you know, here's another dozen pictures from the school, you know. But teachers are absolutely loving it. This is the thing. And whatever's easy and quick for teachers to do gets done. Whereas with Weebly back last year, like the rate of posting had just fallen off, and we were getting actually a lot of complaints about that because people loved the content so much from the school that they wanted it to keep going, and we were just like, well, Weebly is just broken. There's nothing we can do about it. So we were on a burning platform and had to get off it. And so far, almost all the feedback on Instagram has been super super positive, and people are really liking it.
Can we post these stats in the show notes?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It'd be interesting people to see, and they can kind of see their, you know, post for that. It's a great stat. So, you know, overall with Instagram, you know, it's a good tool. I would say it's a very useful tool for schools just because it's so photo driven, and that's what schools parents want to see. And it to us, it's really. It's not even a marketing place, because on, you know, on Facebook, you can list your phone number and you can list, you know, it's like all that stuff. But you know, Instagram is really just photos and videos. But you know, Twitter is a tool that like you and I like to use. Our school has an account. We don't post on it as much as we often should, mainly because it's, you know, some of our parents are on there, but you know, most of them are not. Now, I'll tell you where we do use it. Like, so our school participates in this thing called Share Your Christmas every year. The local news station puts it on. It's like a canned food drive. Well, we've kind of, not to brag, we've won it for like 4 years in a row. Like our section, like, you know, because obviously we're not competing in the same group as like a K-12 school, but like of the schools our size, like we've won the past 4 years. One of our parents told me one time, I like competitions that I can buy my way to victory. And if there's ever one to have that attitude for, it's a canned food drive. We'll tweet about that, and then we'll tag like the news station people, and like, cause like when they come to present our trophy, we will, you know, take the, you know, tweet the photo of like them handing us the trophy and then tag them. They'll often retweet it, and you know, so on and so forth. We often use it too. This is like really kind of crazy. I don't know if you, have you ever like canceled? I don't know how that works in the UK of like canceling school, but there's like a whole thing. Like there's special passcodes when you call the news stations, and it's all online now. Like you go in there and you say, hey, we're closed tomorrow. Well, oftentimes like just to, like I know a lot of the people at the news stations, and so like they know that's our account. And so when we announce school's closing, we'll tag them and they'll add it that we're closed tomorrow because they know us well enough to know that's our account and it's not like a – I guess I should get that page verified actually.
You've just made that a very high-value hacking target for kids. I hope you've got two-factor turned on for that kind.
Yeah, I need to get that.
School's canceled every single day now.
Every single day it's shut down. But you know, Twitter, it's a third, but I think it's useful to have. It's just not mm-hmm. something that we use daily.
Yeah, I think I sort of dust off our account whenever there's a snow day, which is not very often, but it's not something that we've had a lot of requests for or you know, to get more that way. But we did a communication survey a few years ago, and not a few years ago, 2 years ago, I think it was, and we asked people, like, how would you like to get in-school information? And almost everybody just still said email, you know, and Twitter was like, you know, 1% of people said they would prefer Twitter. You know, so we decided at that point not to put a huge amount of effort into it.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said about email. We had this thing called like Notes Home, and that's like, and it's the idea is it started like when we send these things home called Tuesday folders, and so Tuesday folders are like they're suicides. There are bring back to school, and there's like it's basically stuff you need to work on. So like my son has homework in his Tuesday folder. Like in kindergarten, they just have homework one night a week. And so, like, they send all of his work he's done home in one side. We look at it. I take pictures of the good stuff, then throw it in the recycling because, let's be real, I can't keep all that stuff. And then we do his homework. We send it back. Well, and so we did this thing called, like, Notes Home. We would send in school. The original idea was, like, inside the sheet would be Notes Home. Like, you know, school notes, school news would be in there. And, you know, just FYI. Well, we moved that to digital, obviously, like, 10 years ago, long time ago. And we kept sending it out on Tuesday because that's when the Tuesday folders went home. Well, I didn't like that as a parent because it was like if we needed something like that was due on Friday, I had to make something or go get something. It's like I wanted a weekend to have that. And so we made the change this year. We kind of talked about like why was it that way? And that's how we discovered it was because of the Tuesday folders. Because it was, you know, we had to copy, make copies and all that jazz. So we changed it this year to be like a Friday to Friday thing. So like on Friday, like I've already gotten next week's like school news and we call them the classroom overviews. Basically like what your kid's doing next week. Like here's the important dates, test, what they need to be working on. So now we send that out on Friday. So I've actually already got most of next week's stuff on my desktop actually. And so I'll go in late tonight. I don't post it now because if there's something the parent needs to see for tomorrow, so I'll go in like probably 10 o'clock tonight because at that point, if they hadn't, you know, you're not working on it at 10 o'clock at night. And I'll go ahead and get next week's stuff on the website. And then either then or first thing in the morning, I'll send out and say, hey guys, just, you know, click here. Oh, it's a simple email. It says click here for this week's classroom overviews and school news. And all it is a link to our website, to like the classes page that has like K3, K4, K5, first, second, and so on. And it's funny, like so many parents have said they love that because it allows them to kind of better prepare for the next week over the weekend. They can know like, hey guys, we're going to be really busy next week. So we need to make sure we knock out all this homework we can or get this project done over the weekend. So, because I'm kind of that way about our lunch menu. I don't know why I care about this. Like if we send out the lunch menu like a monthly thing. So if the first of the month is on a Wednesday, I want the menu to be sent out that previous week at minimum by Friday. So parents, when they're doing grocery shopping, can know like, okay, my kids will eat 3 days next week. I need to get stuff to pack for 2 days. And that's like just like a mental thing with me that giving parents the weekend to do any kind of like errands they need to do for school. Because I mean, now that I've got two kids in school and I've got three total, like we're busy and we don't even do much. But there's just like the mundane of like living life, going home, and we don't even have any. Again, none of my kids play sports yet, so we're not even that busy.
Wait till that starts.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even that busy, and it just feels like already feels like everything's overwhelming. And so I love to kind of work ahead and be like, okay, next week we think we're going to have this to do. Let's try to knock that out over the weekend, or at least buy the stuff we need for next week.
Okay, I can tell you, once you get two kids in school and one out of school. And they're doing instrument tuition, and there's music books to go back and forward. I'm looking at all these music books. I'm going to scan all of them, and I'm going to keep them somewhere in school just in case they forget a book somewhere. I'm not actually doing that. That would be copyright violation. But anyway, that organization thing is something that, I don't know if you see this in school, but like some parents really want that, and no matter how other parents, no matter how much information you give them, they're never organized anyway. And I suppose you got to cater for the ones who are going to be organized, but it's a challenge to keep it all together. You know, every family is feeling the pain of that, and particularly in a world where like we are so like. The cultural expectation is that your kids are just doing everything, right? They're doing instrument, they're doing drama, they're doing sports, they're doing, you know, they're doing other after school activities, they're volunteering, they're doing, you know, whatever else it is. And to try and schedule all of that, I mean, I was talking to parents of a kid who's wanting to apply for a very competitive university course that requires a lot of kind of extracurricular work. And we sat down and we were talking about the year. And I said to them, look, I'm not absolutely sure how you're going to fit all this into 1 year, all these things that you need to get done here and do the academic stuff as well, you know. And they were like, yeah, it's a real challenge. We're going to have to schedule every free week that we've got between now and the day of the application to just give him time to get through all the things that he's expected to get through. You know, I mean, the pressure we put kids under these days is terrible.
I despise busyness for the sake of business. Yeah. And I think I think there's like, I don't know, like I don't feel like when I was growing up we were that busy in terms of like I played like one sport and I played baseball and that was it, and we weren't like a, you know, it was like rec league ball. We didn't do the traveling thing. And then I feel like in between like now and when I was a kid, like things have gone like overboard. People, it's like with sports and hobbies and activities, it's like you've got to be obsessed with it to be, you know, to be good. And the idea is like, if you're a great soccer player or sorry, football player, mm-hmm. you specialize in that and you do that all the time and you get a great scholarship and et cetera, et cetera. And then, mm-hmm. So I feel like almost the pendulum swinging the other way. And like, there are parents of like kids that are our kids' age that are kind of like, we don't want to be busy. Like we need to cut things down. Like we can't have like all two or three of our kids playing multiple sports throughout the year. Like we need to pick something and do it. And then we need to take breaks. We need to rest as a family. And like, I despise busyness. Cause I think I just value like being bored at home and like value Saturdays where we don't have anything to do.
Mm. Yeah. My girls are not, sit at home, do nothing types. I'm afraid. Beth in particular, she's a firecracker. She just wants to be up and out doing something every single minute of every single day. And she's into rock climbing. She's into gymnastics. She's into, both the girls play netball and things like that, you know, and it's, and now she wants to play an instrument as well. And she wants, you know, April plays clarinet. She plays piano. She does singing lessons. It's crazy, you know, and I'm the guy who's sitting here going, oh, this is disgraceful. Kids are so overscheduled, and my own kids are so overscheduled, you know. And it's like, how do you kind of, you know, what do you want to give up? You know, that's also true with school, right? You know, people want you to put more and more things into the curriculum, and eventually at some point you go say, well, what am I taking out of the curriculum to put that in? I'm like, oh no, we can't drop anything from the curriculum. You know, like what was the last thing we dropped from school? Was it teaching Latin or something like that? You know. And the number of things we've added in since then. So
we've had that same conversation. It's like, to do something new, we got to get rid of something.
Yeah.
And so, well, I think that's a good place to leave it. We should write a book, GTD for students.
You know what? I would love to get, you know, David Allen in his later years to write something like that. You know, how do you take those kind of skills, if you like, and you know, because as somebody who's done GTD and does do GTD, I know it's taken me like 14 years to get really good at GTD, you know, and I've had the kind of week where the only thing that's kept me from cracking up this week has been GTD. And I would love to find a way to teach that to kids in a way that's kind of non-threatening, right? And they don't have to get into a panic situation before they know how to do that. But, you know, time management is starting to get to be an important thing to teach in school.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Thanks to our sponsor this week, Diamond Assets. We'll have a link to their website in the show notes. We'll have some links to things we talked about in the show notes at outofschool.net. I'm on the web at chambersdaily.com. I had a new blog post last week, first one in a few months, on I've been thinking about the sillier Apple Watch future, and I think how that's going to be a big thing. And you can connect with me on Twitter at Bradley Chambers.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and Spears.org on the web, where I also posted this week. I was talking about we were using these Amazon Web Services virtualized Windows computers, and I basically was making an effort to try and manage the cost of that a little bit better. So we'd talk a little bit about how we set up the system, where we use the licenses for Office and things like that, and also did a bit of scheduling work, writing some scripts and running those scripts on a schedule to basically start and stop the workspaces just in time for the class to start and stop them just after the class finishes, to save a bit of money as well. So check that out. Let me know what you think.
Well, have a good week, everybody.